Muirfield 1959. Gary Player, who started the final round four behind the leaders, has played beautifully in the win to reach the final hole, hoping to set a clubhouse total of 282. But a double bogey six for a round of 68 gives him a score of 284. That's a total the South African doesn't think will be good enough to win. But Fred Bullock and Flory van Donk falter, and Gary Player wins his first Open. Another golden moment from the Open.
First of his nine major championships did indeed take place on the afternoon of July 3rd, 1959, at Muirfield Golf Links in Scotland. Yes, he was runner-up a year before in the U.S. Open, but it was at Muirfield when the South African Gary Player emerged as the champion golfer of the year with his inaugural major title, and our game has been so much the better ever since. Hello, my name is Kelly Elbin, and it is my honor to welcome you to an extraordinarily special episode of Musings on Golf as we celebrate the 90th birthday and absolutely remarkable life of the one and only Gary Player. Mr. Player, as we record this, we are just 2 days shy of your 90th, which will take place on November 1st, 2025. Gary, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you, and where are you at this special time in your life?
Well, Kelly, thank you for the nice introduction by you and Janice. I'm in South Africa right now at a resort called Sun City, and there's no question about it. I've traveled more miles than any human being that's ever lived, and this is the greatest resort on the planet. They have a game reserve here with the Big Five. They have swimming pools, casinos, two golf courses. They have animal parks, crocodile ponds. They have everything you could conceivably think about. And we chose this, and we got 500 guests coming here for Saturday on my 90th birthday from America, Alaska, Britain, Australia, all over the world. It's a very thrilling time just to reach 90. And to reach 90 being well, a lot of people reach 90. So they're not living, they're existing. But I am living because I don't take any medicine whatsoever. Still working hard, still traveling all around the world, still very fit, still breaking, equaling par, shooting par at 90. So, and I've got a girlfriend from America, which has been fantastic at 90 to get a girlfriend, particularly when you've been married to a wonderful woman like I was for 72 years or whatever it was. And, you know, now to be lonely is a terrible thing, particularly when you travel like I do, living in hotels and motels almost every week of your life. So it's been gratifying playing golf, working hard, and everything is fantastic. Thank you, Kelly.
My goodness, Mr. Player, at 90, life is incredibly full for you, isn't it?
It really is. I still go to the gym and I push 300 pounds with my legs, the leg press. I do all the sit-ups and push-ups and run on the treadmill, play golf four times a week, travel around the world working for companies like Rolex and PXG, a lot of different companies, and doing days and outings. And so, you know, really, I'm doing the same things I did all my life.
Gary, we're going to cover a lot of ground in this interview. I want to go back to the start of this interview with that voiceover from the 59 Open. As you recall, the Open Championship back in 59 was played over just 3 days. The final two rounds that year contested on a Friday. And while you did raise the first of your three claret jugs that day at Muirfield, as we heard, Gary, the way that that final hole played out for you, it was not exactly a sure thing to beating Fred Bullock. Fred was a Scottish club professional, I believe. He held the lead over the first three rounds, and Flory van Donk of Belgium. You ended up winning by two, Gary, but it was anything but certain when you walked off the 18th green.
Absolutely, and you had Bobby Locke, one of the two best punters that ever lived, and Peter Thompson that won five Opens, and everybody had a chance playing the last day. Flory van Donk had won at least 80 tournaments in his life. And I took this double bogey, and I played so well in the wind and rain. And honestly, when I think I shot 284 at Muirfield, a tough golf course with a wooden head and a lousy ball, and you weren't allowed a knockdown spike box, and you raked a bunker with your feet. You didn't have bunkers all raked by a machine. and in that wind and rain, it was one of the best scores I ever did. And what a thrill, because now I've always felt that the British Open was the most important tournament in the world. Historically, you play in it. It's the hardest test mentally. You play in the morning and the wind is blowing, in the afternoon there's no wind. And then you get in the bunker and you've got to play out backwards. It's just, you know, it's just a different test of golf to teach you to never feel sorry for yourself. If you do, you might as well not tee up in the tournament. But that was a very big start for me, because my wife had just had our first baby girl. I wasn't able to fly back to South Africa to be there. I couldn't afford it. And then I went to the club at Muirfield, and I went to practice. And the club secretary said, no, you cannot practice here. And I went on my hands and knees in the clubhouse. And he succumbed and let me play. And I practiced hard. And he became a good friend of mine. So it all worked out well.
Well, it worked out more than well. Gary, I'd like to, because we are celebrating your 90th, I'd like to go back to the start, if we could. You were the youngest of three children to your parents, Harry and Muriel. Your dad was a captain in a gold mine in Johannesburg. Your dad spent most of his working life, my understanding, some 12,000 feet underground in that gold mine. And sadly, you lost your mom to cancer when you were only 8 years old. Gary, I read that later you wrote that her loss, quote, has been a means for me, as it were, to settle some unfathomable debt. What did you mean by that, Mr. Player?
What it's basically saying that one has to suffer in life to be a success, a great success. All people that I've seen that have attained really great success have had their turn and their time with adversity. And with my mother dying at 9, basically, my father working down in that gold mine every day for 30 years, that's a dog's life, for £100 a month. My brother went to war from school in Johannesburg at 17 to fight for the American flag. My sister was at boarding school. South Africa have the best school on the planet by a mile. You speak five languages, you've got the best sporting facilities, you still say a prayer in school, which I'm proud about, and you've got a code of dress and manners. And so I was lucky. My mother had sent me to that school before. It was a public school, too, before she died. And that just, I cannot begin to tell you what it did for me in my life. And I visited the school yesterday to speak to the boys and to just explain to them how lucky they are to go to a school like that. But with my mother dying, it taught me that you got to suffer. And I lay in bed when I was 10 years of age, on and off for 2 years, wishing I was dead. It was so tough. Traveling to school an hour and a half in the morning, having to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning when you're 9 years of age, and then come home and nobody at the house, iron your clothes, wash your clothes, cook your food. I had a black gentleman called John Chabalala, who came in once a week to see I was all right. Wonderful old man. It was just a tough time, and that's why I never choked. I didn't always win, but I won the most tournaments in the world today. And I'm the only one that won the Grand Slam on the regular tour and senior tour. And I did that because of the way I struggled as a young man. Because when I played golf, I never believed anybody could beat me. And so that stood me in good stead to have that kind of an upbringing.
And as part of that upbringing, you started playing golf at 14, and by 17, goodness sakes, Gary, within 3 years, you turned professional. I'm wondering, where did you play golf as a youngster? And I guess more importantly, how did you get so good at the game so quickly?
In South Africa, we've won the most major championships of any country in the world other than the United States. We won 23 post-war. 23 major championships. We're inundated in South Africa with great golf courses, the best climate, the best beaches. So we've got everything in our favor to become good golfers. We had good coaches. We had great golf courses. We had great climate. We had tournaments to play in. And then when I told my dad I wanted to be a pro, he nearly had a heart attack. He said, "You got to be joking. You cannot even win a club championship and you want to be a pro?" And I said, "Yes, I'll work harder." And I doubt if anybody's ever worked harder than I have, both mentally, physically, and on the swing. Certainly not a combination. Nobody's worked harder at exercise, diet, mind, the whole kebang in one go. Some people might, Ben Hogan might have worked harder than I did on practicing, but not on the overall game.
Did you have an instructor or were you self-taught?
My wife's father helped me with the essential ingredients to start. My wife was a scratch player. She had a wonderful eye for the golf swing, and they didn't know the intricacies. The man who knew the most about a golf swing in the history of the game was Ben Hogan, but he wasn't anxious to tell a lot of people. But Ben Hogan was the straightest hitter that I ever saw in my life, and he had the best swing that I ever saw in my life. But he went to war in the midst of his prime, and then he came back and had a terrible accident, so who knows how good he would have been if those things never occurred. But and he also gave me some great tips coming along, which held me in good stead.
I understand that Mr. Hogan was your idol. And Gary, my late father, Max Elbin, was the president of the PGA of America in the late 60s. I know you remember my dad. And my dad revered Mr. Hogan, as did many from that time. What was it about Ben Hogan that had so many of his peers who looked up to him, admired him, and really just almost adored him as a professional golfer?
Well, first of all, Max Elbin, I really admired him. He was the pro in Washington, wasn't he?
He was at Burning Tree Club for 50 years.
Correct. And I think that's where I played with President Eisenhower, who I admired so much. A man who brought freedom to America and the world, and a man that was at Normandy and made decisions, and his general didn't agree, and Montgomery didn't agree, but Eisenhower was something special. And I must say that Ben Hogan was the straightest hitter I ever saw, had the best swing I ever saw, had a work ethic that was unbelievable, and everybody admired that. And he wasn't a friendly man. He was a very shy man. He was a very tough man, in fact. But he wouldn't tell you what he was working on. But I was very keen and very blessed that he mentioned two things for me to work on, which I did. And he offered me a contract of $2,000 a year in 1958. And the same day I was offered $9,000, and I took that because I needed the money to travel for my wife and family from South Africa back and forth to America, and he got very upset at me. He didn't know my circumstances, but I still admired him, and he knew one thing for sure. He knew more about the golf swing, way more than any man that ever played the game.
What were the two things that the two tips or whatever you want to call it, that he gave to you that helped you in your career?
To get my swing flat on the backswing. Flat. And then rotate the hips as fast as you can like a cobra.
Did you get to know him as well as anybody could get to know Mr. Hogan? He was a complicated man, Gary.
He was a complicated man. He was indeed. I'll give you an amazing thing. They had the Ryder Cup at Houston, Texas, at the Champions Golf Course. Jackie Burke and Mike Suchak's and Jimmy Demerit's golf course. And they had a Ryder Cup there, and Arnold Palmer, who he was the ultimate gentleman. And Arnold Palmer went up and said, "Ben, who am I playing?" And he said, who told you you're playing? He just said, "Who told you you're playing?" And he never played him that match. And Palmer and Hogan never got on at all. They fiercely competitors against each other. But they were both wonderful people. But Arnold Palmer was a wonderful pro with people. And for me, I don't judge a man how great he was at playing the game. I love what he did, how he looked after people. I love the way that Scottie Scheffler behaves. I love the way that Tommy Fleetwood behaves. I hated the way they behaved in the Ryder Cup. It was the filthiest thing I've ever seen in my life. And for young children to be around and to be exposed to that, and for young people around the world to see this taking place and influencing the whole world on things like this, I mean, it was disgusting. If I'd had my young children there, I'd have to pick them up and leave the course immediately to hear that filthy language from players and from spectators. And the PGA hired a lady to stand on the first tee in the morning and use that F word across the board? No. The PGA should, and I'm such an admirer of the PGA, and the PGA pros do so much good in the world, but what occurred there was disgraceful.
Couldn't agree with you anymore. It was embarrassing. I worked for the PGA of America as their head of communications for a dozen years, Gary, and I feel the pain that you're speaking to. It was I thought it was a very dark event in golf. In the end, quite honestly, as an American, I was happy the Europeans won. I felt like they've been the best team. They figured out, and you've been the captain on the President's Cup team, so you know about teams, but they figured out a model, Gary, that works. And it seems to me the United States is going to be hard-pressed to really be, to get back in the victory circle in the Ryder Cup for a while, just the way that model is for the Europeans.
The thing that, you know, the British beer galleries are no angels either, but they don't use that filthy language when you're getting ready to play and things like that, but they know angels. Personally, I think the Ryder Cup should be scrapped, because it's a terrible example. It's not this year. It's every year. If you see what happened at Medina and you see what happened at Brookline, I mean, I remember these things. I've watched more Ryder Cups than anybody that's alive. And I never heard Ben Hogan, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Lee Trevino, Tom Watson, Ballesteros, or Bernard Langer. I never heard them swearing with the F word every second word. I never heard as a captain, never heard him saying that, never. It never existed. Now, they're going to have Donald Duck swearing in the movies one of these days. I cannot watch a movie with my grandchildren today, who are young kids. You can't go. I took my girlfriend to a movie the other day with Burt Lancaster and Deborah Kerr called the most wonderful movie. And I said, I want you to watch this. They never had one swear word in it. I see the lady politicians in America swearing, the worst words. What are we doing with young children? At school, they're swearing like troopers. Bernard Shaw, the great philosopher, said, anybody who swears a lot has a limited vocabulary.
You hinted earlier about your passion for fitness, and I'm wondering, Mr. Fitness, as you've been dubbed through the years, you were so far ahead of your time with that. What was a good fit body? Was that something that was stressed internally by your family, or was that something that you just decided, Gary Player, to take upon yourself early in life and continue literally your entire life?
The day before my brother went to fight for the American flag, he stood there in Johannesburg. He said, I might never come back. What do you want to do? I was 9 years old. I said, I want to be an athlete. He said, you're too weak and too small. And he bought me a second-hand set of weights. And I promised him faithfully to the day I die, I would adhere to his request, and that is to keep exercising. And that's the reason at 90 I can still shoot par. And I can still work like I did when I was 20. And I travel around the world, and I'm never in one place for a week. I just never stop working. And I exercise profusely. And I sleep well. And I laugh a lot. And I read a lot. We've got to get young children. We've got to get children back to where they were in America, reading a lot of books. You look at a man like Elon Musk, he's a genius because he reads and reads. Let's go back to our great president, Lincoln. He had no formal education. He got it by reading and became a lawyer. And he loved nature, and he did a lot of reading, and he was a man who studied a lot. And the emancipation of slaves, what a man. What a man. We've got to get young people to go back to have decent manners. Say a prayer in school. One lady took all the prayers of school out of prayers out of America. Why take the prayers out? Does it do any harm to say a prayer of gratitude and thankful and thank you for this great America that we live in? Why must it be stopped? If a child in South Africa, if you don't want to say a prayer, you go outside, but they're not going to stop the whole school from saying a prayer because a few don't want to. So, but this is only my opinion. And so, the things, the manners that children had, the way they knew how to greet. You asked any young child in America today, and I got 15 American grandchildren. How are you? Good. Yesterday, the school, I went back to my school. I asked 50 young boys, how are you? Hat came off. Fine, thank you, sir. How are you? I mean, it's a tidy thing. It's manners maketh a man. We've got, and this is why I love Donald Trump. He doesn't like wars. He hates wars. And this is something, everybody says he's weak because he doesn't hammer Putin. You can't just go hammering Putin. You talk about nations with lots of nuclear weapons. You've got to be careful. As it is, he's caused peace for 7 countries. He works night and day. He never sleeps. He loves America. And you find people just crucify him, never giving him any credit. Now, yes, nobody does everything right, but at least praise a man for the good of America. A lot of these people, I mean, he cleans up Washington, D.C., Chicago, which used to be my home base. They have 20 people killed or maimed every weekend. He wants to go there and stop it. They don't want him to come there because if he does clean it up, he'll get a lot of praise. Seems to me they'd rather they die than keep them alive. But I don't know. Donald Trump's going to clean America up to where it was before. And the drugs, can you imagine 1 million, and I do a lot of talks at schools and universities, 1 million people have been killed by fentanyl and drugs that come from China into Mexico across the border. He's stopping that, and he's criticized. Your child, imagine your child on drugs. That's when you realize it. And 1 million wonderful young boys and girls in the greatest country in the world being destroyed by drugs. Why, I love Singapore. If you're a drug peddler in Singapore, they kill you next week. Lee Kuan Yew, this great leader who made Singapore a great country, they were annexed by the Japanese. He says, I'm not going to have 1,000 young boys and girls killed by one man. We'd rather kill one man who's going to kill the 1,000 people. And you can raise all the money you like. And I've helped raise a lot of money to fight drugs. It doesn't stop them.
And you'll hear more of our special 90th birthday celebration interview with the great Gary Player right after this from our friends at William & Harry and Titleist. William & Harry has entered a bold new era led by their new Lionhead logo, symbol of strength, leadership, and fearless ambition. Step onto the course with purpose. Outplay the field, and dominate your opponent, all while wearing handcrafted shoes that blend performance, luxury, and unmistakable style. William & Harry offers custom designs featuring your club, company, or organization's logo, so you stand out with every step. Visit williamandharry.com and use code 15OFF, M-O-G, for 15% off. William & Harry, walk with the lion.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee. More control with your irons. More spin with the wedges. And more opportunity to shoot your lowest score.
What a thrill to be joined by the legendary Gary Player here on Musings on Golf. Mr. Player, your passion, no matter the subject matter, has always carried you. I want to segue a bit and ask you about the term the Black Knight, which you've long been known for. What's the story behind your passion for wearing all black on the golf course? Is there one particular reason why, Gary?
My father, who was uneducated, but a brilliant man. I'm going to be repetitive. He spoke 3 black languages, Portuguese, English, and Holland, and had no education because he had to leave school to support a family. When I told him I was going to be a pro, he was disgusted. But he said, if you're any good, you've got to have a brand. I had no idea what he's talking about. Zero idea. I came to America. They had a show called Jack, Have Gun, Will Travel. Jack Paladin, dressed in black with a cowboy hat. And he had holsters, and he went around the country, and people that had a problem, he says, here's my card. Let me know what your problem is. If it's serious, I'll help you. I loved that. I said, I'm from Black Africa. I want to help people. I love people. If I can help them, I'm going to. And I decided to wear black. It was the greatest thing I ever did. And you know, when you think about golf, what it's done for charity, it's collected more money than any other two sports together. Arnold Palmer, that great American, and Jack Nicklaus, that great American, and myself have raised well over $600 million for charities to change people's lives. What a game golf is to enable you to do that. And golf is the only game that's play and stay. Every other sport you play, the NFL for 3 years, you're doing well. And then your knees and your shoulders and your head are all affected. Boxing, you're affected. Look at Muhammad Ali, the greatest known athlete that ever lived. Died with Parkinson's, having that big head knocked in by these big guys all the time. What a tragedy. No golf, there's nothing like it. Everybody can play it. A blind man. I've got friends that can't even walk. They're in wheelchairs. They can't play, can't do anything else, can't walk, but they play golf. Blind people. No, it's been, and look what it does for the vets that come back. Without these vets, we would never have that cherished word freedom. Not enough is done for vets. That Tunnel to Towers does a great job. One thing I'm going to do before I die, I'm going to build a beautiful home for a couple of vets that have served America, enabled us to have freedom. And they should show in every school in America, they should show Normandy to show what the American soldiers did for freedom, knowing they had no chance to live.
Gary, you talked about earlier your feelings about the Open Championship, but for so many of us, you and the Masters Tournament have been linked for so long. You won three times. You, as you well know, you were the first non-American to win the green jacket when you won in 61, your record 52 appearances, and all the years now as an honorary starter. I'm wondering, Gary, and I understand that your father, who you mentioned, actually wrote a letter to both Bob Jones and Clifford Roberts about you. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that and also what you remember the very first time you saw Augusta National Golf Club.
Augusta National Golf Club is a very special place. And when you think of the people that have been associated with President Eisenhower, Bobby Jones, one of the greatest gentlemen that ever played golf, and one unbelievable player. Clifford Roberts, who dedicated his life, and all the other chairmen that came along and try to keep it this great golf tournament. The best run tournament in the world. I don't rate it the top one. I rate it fourth in the world, which is still a high rating. Jack Nicklaus rates it fourth as well. But that's irrelevant. It's a great tournament, and the people love it, and they behave well, and it's played at such a beautiful place. And I'm so honored to have won it three times, second three times, top 10, 14 times, the most number of cuts until Tiger beat my record last year, and the most number of times. And I've visited Augusta. This will be my 68th time. So I'm very honored.
What was that first time like? What do you remember about 57, the first time you went down Magnolia Lane?
I was in awe, and I'm still in awe when I go down Magnolia Lane. And I always say a prayer of thanks whilst going down there that I'm blessed to be able to be there and attend the tournament and still be active in the tournament. And then meeting Ben Hogan and Sam Snead and Jimmy DeMarret, all these wonderful golfers, and Bobby Jones that I'd, you know, read about. What an honor. And this great beauty. And the way the discipline that the tournament had. Oh, no, it was just, and how they kept improving every year with the driving range and press facility, locker rooms for the players. I mean, unbelievable.
Gary, I'm wondering, your Masters win in 78, was that your most rewarding considering you were 42 and how far back you were going into the final round that Sunday?
Yes, I was seven behind. Shot 64. My caddy arrived there. He says, Gary, man, I haven't got a roof on my house. I need a roof. And I said, Eddie, we get to get you a roof. And you should have seen him when I hold that putt on the 72nd hole. He jumped 6 foot in the air. And then I was seven behind the next week going to the Tournament of Champions and won that. and the following week I was 6 behind Andy Bean and shot 64 again and won it. So it was 3 weeks, and then I was second the fourth week. But those were three incredible weeks.
Were you almost better, in a sense, being a little bit behind because of your makeup of, I'm gonna catch these guys, and doggone it, I'm going to beat them? Was that almost a better spot for you in a way?
Not really. I won a lot of tournaments, 4 and 5 and 6 shots behind, but I also won tournaments leading. But I think it's your upbringing, what happens to you. You know, Hitler always said, give me a child until he's 10 and he's mine. Mm. And so your upbringing that you started your first 10 years is vital. And I think it was such a lot of adversity that I didn't care what the situation was. I really believed I was going to win. And this is what we must remember right now. Because I love America more than any American loves America. I can tell you that. Mm. Because I've seen things that no American has seen. But if you take a young boy of, say, 17 in Israel, he's so much tougher than a young boy of 17 in America. There's not even a comparison. So we've got to right now, when you're number one in the world at golf, like I was, or Nicklaus, or Hogan, whoever was, to stay there is the hardest thing. America is the greatest country that God ever made. But to stay there, you've got the whole world competing against you. And to do that, we've all got to work at it. And the youth of a nation are the trustees of posterity. We've got to make sure the youth are educated well, that they dress well, that they speak well, that they behave well, and that they exercise. And all these things, but mainly a great education. The education in America has gone down terribly. You've only got to look at the students at places like Harvard and Columbia demonstrating. They're students. The word student is self-explanatory. They think they know everything about the world affairs. They don't. They know very little. But I still think students should be able to demonstrate, but not stand on the library table and say, no constitution, revolution, and stop Jewish people from going to classes and misbehaving and breaking the windows. And it's just a tragedy. Thank goodness that Donald Trump has stood up for what is right. The students have got to go there to study, not tell us how to run the world. I admire a place like Harvard and Columbia, but they've lost all discipline. They've lost all discipline, which is very sad.
Barry, before we go any further with questions from me, I want you to know that I reached out to a friend of yours to see if he might be willing to write a note recognizing your 90th birthday that he would then allow me to read during the course of this conversation. And I'm going to read that to you, and I will tell you, Mr. Player, that this is much more than just a note, so it's a little lengthy, but I know you're going to enjoy this.
Well,
and it reads as follows.
Let me just say that Bo, who's set up this interview, I noticed on his computer here, it says low battery. I hope it doesn't cut off, but go ahead.
Well, I hope it doesn't either. So the letter reads as follows. Dear Gary, I just wanted to send a note through Kelly to wish you an early happy 90th birthday. Although I might be a couple million miles behind you in air travel, you and I have both spent most of our lives playing this great game of golf in just about every corner of the globe. Over those many decades, we've met thousands of people, many who have touched our lives, and a few who have become lifelong friends. But Gary, few, if any, have made a more endearing impression on my life than you. I don't think there's any question that you are my closest friend in the game of golf, and I've always been proud of the special bond we and our families have shared through the years. Our lives, our loves, and our passions have always seemed to run parallel. We both enjoy a good laugh, a good spirited needle, and most important, a deep and unwavering love for family. As a golfer, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. You are, pound for pound, the greatest player I've ever known. What makes that even more remarkable is that you accomplished all of it in between plane trips. Laddie, you may have stood slight in stature, and I won't say anything about your stature today since we now look eye to eye. but there likely has never been, and perhaps never will be, a fiercer competitor in golf than you. The world knows your lifelong love for fitness. It's true. Your waistline probably hasn't changed an inch since we first met back in the early 1960s. Your strength of body is matched only by your strength of mind. And that's been the key to your incredible journey. You attack both golf and life with great fire and passion. Gary, you've done more with your God-given ability than anyone I know. But even more inspiring, you've always recognized your blessings and used them to give back. Whether it's through your charitable work or the way you continue to inspire the next generation, your heart has always led the way. And if there's one thing stronger than your mind, Gary, indeed, it is your heart. That's the foundation of your greatness as a golfer, a humanitarian, and a friend. It's also what I most admire about you. Barbara and I send our deepest love and warmest wishes for a wonderful 90th, my friend. You've had a remarkable life, and the world, and certainly I, am better for having you in it. Jack.
Woo! I've got a little tear coming down in my eye because I'm very much a crybaby. I'm fierce on the golf course, but man, in life I'm a crybaby, and he's my best friend and the best player that ever lived, and his wife was the closest thing to an angel I ever met. So I cannot say thank you. It's a small word, but a massive meaning. And so Jack knows how much I appreciate everything and how much I admire him and his wife and his family. And I was so elated recently to see that he had won his case. And it just made me feel so good, because for a man of that stature to go through that kind of those years of torment, you know, it's tough. So, and what an ambassador he's been for America. Oh, no. And what a family man. He would be playing in a tournament, and he had his son playing in a football match. He'd get on a plane, fly back that night, watch the match, and come back the next day, really giving himself little chance to win with all that going on between. And he did it because he put family first. Jack is a wonderful man, as Arnold Palmer was a wonderful man.
And Gary, how much of a kick is it for you to be able to still tee it up that first full Thursday in April on that first tee and hit that ceremonial first shot with Jack and with Tom Watson? What a thrill that must continue to be for you.
Obviously, I miss Arnold on the first tee, and I'm delighted that Tom Watson is there and to be with Jack. And it is a thrill. Enthusiasm is one of the great essences of life. And those people at that event have such enthusiasm. And it's one of the great joys of my career at this time.
Gary, in the course of that letter near the end, Jack mentioned his loving bride, Barbara. And it would not be right during the course of this conversation if we looked at your life without discussing the love of your life, your wife of 64 years, Vivian, who you lost after she battled pancreatic cancer and passed away in August of 2021. Mr. Player, how do you put into words what your wife, your bride, meant to you and your family over all those years?
She was a marvelous mother, a marvelous wife, a marvelous granny, and a marvelous great-granny. And I doubt if you could find a woman. I never packed a suitcase in my life. She did everything to help me. She watched my golf swing. She traveled around the world with me. She was and gave me all the love in the world. She was the most remarkable woman. And I met her when I was 14. And I went back to the club yesterday, funny enough, where I'd met her. And that was 70 years since we'd been at that club. And it was so choky to walk back and think of the places that we walked and we talked and the things that occurred. I mean, I was on the first tee and I used to run. The members wanted a golf ball and I'd run because she worked in the pro shop. I'd run there 5 times a day just to see her. And what a wife. I was so blessed to have a woman like that. Arnold, Jack, and I were the big three. But the real big three were Barbara, Winnie, and Vivian, my wife. What three wives those women were. When I see pros today having trouble with their wives and wanting to be divorced, et cetera, makes you really, it puts emphasis that you have to have a good woman to be a world champion.
We're nearing the conclusion of our time with the great Gary Player, who celebrates his 90th birthday on November 1st, 2025, with 500 of your friends in Johannesburg. But Gary, during that letter from Jack as well, Mr. Nicholas mentioned about your charitable commitment throughout the years. And I know the Gary and Vivian Player Foundation USA is so important to you and your late bride. You reestablished and renamed it in 2022 to honor the enduring legacy of both of you, a legacy grounded in love, compassion, and opportunity for all children. Gary, in just 3 years, the foundation has raised more than $5 million and blessed more than 40,000 children across the United States. How proud you must be, Gary Player, of what this foundation continues to do, especially with your wife's name attached to it.
She was emphatic about keeping this going on in perpetuity. My daughter, Amanda, who's, you can't get a greater daughter, who's so dedicated to this. We have a great board. Over 90% of the takings go to the charity. We've got a wonderful people representing us on the board. We've changed the lives of plus minus 40,000 people. That the big now, I've just managed to get our school in South Africa, which is for black children, we managed to get it to go to in perpetuity. We got $60 million in the bank. When I die, it will go on. Now my big challenge that I'm facing in America, this charity we have is only for American children. I've got to somehow, I don't know how, get 50, 60 million in the bank so that when I die, this school will go on forever. That's my big dream. And we'll see what happens. But it's such a thrill to go into these inner city schools and to go to a place like down in Florida where parents come in. These are parents that have got nothing to do with the children, but they come and they help direct those children for 1 year. People give 1 year of their life to formulating and making sure these kids turn out to be great citizens for America. But America, not only is it the greatest country in the world, they've been the Samaritan of the world. They've given United Nations, which is not a great organization, they sponsored them. They sponsored NATO. They sponsored almost every country of the world. They've given China. China have taken all the secrets from America. What America's done, people, when I hear these people, these politicians saying, speaking badly about America, I want to puke. What a country. What they've done. The Samaritans they've been. The love they've had for people. For what they stood up is right. My goodness me. I'm so happy to be associated with America. I can't tell you. There's not a day I don't go by and say a prayer of thanks for America. And I have 15 American grandchildren. And I have 3 children that are Americans.
And you spend a fair amount of your year in America, correct?
Oh, 5 to 6 months, yeah. And then in South Africa for 3 to 4, then I go to either India, or I go to Britain, Europe for 2 months, then I go to some other place in the world, India, Australia, or somewhere like that.
Gary Player, I wonder if I could throw out a few categories and ask you to name the best players you've seen over your 90 years in each of these 5 categories. You ready?
Yeah.
Best driver you ever saw?
Ben Hogan.
Best putter of all time that you've seen?
Bobby Locke and Tiger Woods.
Best long iron player?
Jack Nicklaus.
Best overall short game?
Woo! Hard one. There are many, many, many. I'd have to say, if you got to name one, I'd have to say Tiger Woods.
And then finally, best bunker player?
I'd put in Sam Snead or somebody like Paul Azinger was a great bunker player. But Sam Snead was fantastic. There have been a lot of good bunker players as well.
Well, wait a minute. What about Gary Player?
Well, you can't put yourself in there. I think my record, I think my records out of bunkers are the best, but I can't put myself in as that.
I read an interview you had in the last couple of days with Tom DeAngelo of the Palm Beach Post, in which you were asked to name the top three golfers of all time. And you did. You included yourself as third. You had Jack first, Tiger second. I'm wondering if you could maybe add one for me, Gary, almost like a Mount Rushmore of all-time great golfers. Who would be your four? Jack, Tiger, you. Who would you put right behind you?
Look, the other day I said I thought my record was the third best record in the world because I won the most tournaments in the world, and I won the only man to win the Grand Slam on both tours, and I've won more national titles, US Open, British Open, than Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, and Arnold Palmer together. But I rate Jack Nicklaus number one, and I'd rate Tiger Woods number two. And on Mount Rushmore, we're going to keep it for Americans. I put Ben Hogan in there, and I would put Sam Snead.
Closing question, I can't thank you enough for your time. And let's look ahead for a minute. In addition to, I know you've got a next phase of the Gary and Vivian Player Foundation that's going to come out in early 2026. You're going to be on the first tee with Jack and Tom. You're going to be welcoming not just Rory McIlroy in as a Masters champion, but also as joining you and four others, a total of six now, who've won all four of the major championships in your career. What's next? In addition to all of that, what's next for Gary Player as you begin your 91st year on planet Earth?
Philanthropy. I want to be a great philanthropist. I want to help the youth of America. I want to raise a lot of money. I want to try and get them to have good manners. I want to try and get them to be fit, to realize that their bodies are holy temple, to make them realize how lucky they are to be in America and strive for a great education and stay away from drugs and do exercises and have fitness in your life, have love in your heart. My dream for the little time I've got left is to keep America number one.
Mr. Player, I know that I represent legions of Gary Player fans throughout the world who thank you for so many indelible memories and wish you not only a very happy 90th birthday, but many, many more to come. I cannot thank you enough for taking the time and exhibiting the passion that you've given us today on Musings on Golf. Happy 90th birthday, Gary Player. It's been a real honor to speak with you.
Thank you, sir, and God bless America.